You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
You were provided seven different choices of what most accurately represents the way you feel, and you chose D, which reads, "I am generally opposed to the death penalty, but I believe I can put aside my feelings against the death penalty and impose it if it is called for by the facts, law, and instructions in the case." Does that still accurately represent the way you feel about the death penalty?
Yes.
And would you be able to follow any instructions the court gave in this case if you had to consider that?
Yeah.
All right, I'll next ask you, are you in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder has been committed?
No.
Okay. Finally then, is there anything about your views on the death penalty that would prevent or substantially impair your ability to serve as a juror in this case and follow the court's instructions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you for your responses. I'll see if there's any board dire from the state.
We have no questions, Your Honor.
No questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for returning that conclusion individual board dire. Final juror will be 1100. All right, welcome back, juror number 1100. We have some additional questions for you individually here. I would note that you did raise your card when we asked if you knew something about the case. You mentioned a little bit about that in your questionnaire also, saying also you did not follow the case. And then I'll just ask the state if the state would like to commence with individual voir dire for this juror on the issue of bias.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
So you indicated on your questionnaire that you had a little bit of media exposure to this case.
I mean, I listened to the radio. I watched TV reports and things like that. So it'd be hard to miss.
Of course.
Miss something. So, yes, I'm aware that the case existed, but as far as I was concerned, it was over with. I mean, it's been, 3 years or something like that. I just know it's been long.
Thank you. So this might sound like kind of an odd question, but what do you know about the case? Just kind of an overview.
All I know is that there were some deaths that occurred. I do know that this the one thing that stuck in my mind, I don't even know why, was is that people had gone to Hawaii. That's the only thing I can remember.
And do you know what people had gone to Hawaii that you saw on the news? Okay.
Sure.
And would you be able to set aside whatever you've heard on the news and only consider the evidence that's introduced in trial in this case?
I will do that.
And, sir, you'll be instructed that Mr. Daybell is entitled to a presumption of innocence until the state meets its burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Are you okay with that?
I am. I think I need to probably have a little bit better understanding of where that line is of reasonable doubt. That's one
of
thing I've tried to understand. And so, from my standpoint, I don't know where that line is drawn.
And you'll be instructed on that by the judge. The judge will provide you several instructions, and one of those instructions will be a definition of reasonable doubt that you will have. But for today's purposes, I just want to make sure that you can start this trial with a clean slate, giving Mr. Daybell the presumption of innocence that he's entitled to.
I believe that I can do that.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. I have no additional questions, Your Honor.
All right. Board dire from the defense.
And again, sir, there's no right or wrong answer.
There's no right or wrong answer here. We're just trying to get your feelings and your impressions. And this is a chance for us to talk a little bit, to delve in deeper about things. So please don't take any offense to what I ask.
Cool.
Thank you.
Do you have your questionnaire with you?
I do.
And I would turn to page 19. Item.
I have it in front of me.
Okay, item number 10, and I want you to go to 10D. And let me know when you're there.
I'm at 10D on 19.
And I'm going to read this so that we, and then stop me if you need to. And it reads as follows. Has any of your possible exposure to the news media, dramatized depictions, or other publicity around the case caused you to, and you underlined, form an opinion about Chad Daybell's guilt or innocence. And your response, you didn't mark the yes or no, but you said possibly because of their nature, but understand that I would need to be evaluate the info at a trial. So if I understand what you said there, and don't let me put words in your mouth, okay? Please clarify and say what you need to say.
Okay.
I've gone through a number of these, and then there are a lot of people that say that. They say, you know what? At the time of trial, I can evaluate and look at the evidence independently, despite the fact that I may have some information that leads me one way or the other. Okay? And I have no doubt, and I think, I guess if you would commit to this, at the time of trial, you would be able to look at the evidence and make a determination based on what you hear during the trial, right?
I believe that I can, yes.
Okay, and that's where I'm struggling a little bit.
Okay.
Because part of your answer said possibly, and what I read that to mean is that you already have some impressions in your mind. You already have some images, and you have an idea of what you think about this case, right?
Yes, because of the nature of those reports.
Right.
You talked about that earlier.
Right.
And that, you know, sometimes when media is doing things, they do that with, you know, an intent to convince, sometimes with an agenda.
Right.
And so there's no doubt that because of the things that I heard and saw, you don't form some sort of an opinion. People always come up with some sort of advice. I think anybody would be, they would be dishonest if they weren't telling you that there wasn't some sort of a bias that does come into that. But I believe that now being asked, if I were to be asked to be a juror, then I have to set all that aside and I have to then look at the information that is presented.
And you know what? I respect and admire your honesty. I really do. Because, you know, that says a lot that what you're willing to do is you're willing to evaluate this case at the time, despite the fact that you've had access, and despite the fact that you've seen some things and listened to some things, and that you've formed an opinion based on what you've said from these folks in the media who sensationalize things, right? But that has caused you to form an opinion at this point. But despite that, you're willing to sit down and look at this thing and make a determination. Would that be fair?
I am, yes.
Okay. And please don't take offense to anything I say.
Sure.
And again, there's no right or wrong answer. It's just we have to look at this in a certain way, and that's why we have the jobs that we do, okay?
Okay.
And Judge, I'm going to move for pause on this one.
All right. Response from the state.
Your Honor, if I could ask just one question.
Yes.
Sir, I don't know if I missed it, but I believe Mr. Pryor had made some reference to you forming an opinion. Have you formed an opinion? And if so, what is that opinion?
Well, the opinion is just that it was an egregious crime that occurred, and that the people that have been identified were more than likely those folks who, again, were involved in whatever occurred. And again, I don't know the details now other than just the little things that I heard on the news.
Okay. And do you know who those people were?
I didn't even know the names until I got called on this, and it's been mentioned who the case was about. That's all.
Okay. Would you be able to set aside what you've heard on the news and just consider the evidence in this case?
Yes, I will.
Okay. Your Honor, I'd submit to the court.
All right. And not to prolong things unnecessarily, but there were a few other comments that came up that I think, in fairness, Mr. Pryor, if you have any additional for Dyer on his statement, you can proceed. If not, I'll make a determination.
So on number D, you talked about that you have formed an opinion, but you're willing to set that aside. Is that correct?
Yes. It's not a strong opinion. It's just I knew that at one point in time I had formed an opinion.
And then underneath that, there's item number F. Have you formed a personal opinion whatsoever based on information from any source of Chad Daybell's guilt or innocence or anything? And you said, not beyond D above. And what that's saying is whether Chad's guilty, he's one of the parties, obviously, to the media that you saw. Is that right?
Yes, I mean, and I now know in this context that...
Right. He's one of the parties.
He's one of the parties.
And you formed an opinion that... and you're willing to evaluate the information that's presented to you if you're picked as a juror, but that's going to be require you to say, listen, I'm willing to set aside my personal opinion about Mr. Daybell's guilt and evaluate this independently. Is that what you're saying?
I am, and I believe that I've already done that by the fact that I've now been asked to be a juror.
Okay.
So then you have to go back to ground zero, in my mind, and start over. But again, to be honest, I have to say that it's natural for someone to hear those reports and to immediately assume at the beginning that that stuff is correct.
And that's something that we all have to discipline ourselves with, right?
Correct.
When you're in a situation, all of us, and I agree, when you read something and you look at information and you're exposed to the variety of the information, you form an opinion.
Yes.
And what has to happen is you have to make a discipline yourself to say, in spite of the fact that I've formed an opinion, and in spite of the fact that I've sort of decided this is what I sort of think, I'm going to set my opinion aside and work towards trying to be fair based on the information I hear at trial, right?
That's correct. I've had to do that many times in my life.
Okay, and did you hear anything else about any other co-defendants in this case of any kind?
No, I just know that there was the deaths that occurred, and I also know that there were people who were identified. And I can't tell you even how many at this point until you told was gone over in the charges.
Right. And so you'll agree to set aside your opinion that you've put together today, and based on that you'll try to discipline yourself. And you said you'll try.
Yes, I will.
Okay. Judge, if I could just have a moment.
Yes.
Nothing else, Judge.
All right. I have a couple of follow-up questions, Juror 1100. So just knowing what you do know, would you think this defendant here, Mr. Daybell, would need to somehow convince you or show you some proof that he's not guilty?
No.
All right. Given what you do know about the case or what you've seen or heard, will you commit that you would follow the court's instructions and hold the government to its burden of proof?
I will.
All right. The court is, on this juror, going to find that there's not a bias prejudice at this stage that would prevent his service based on previous knowledge of the case, so the challenge is overruled. We have one other area to go through with you then, juror number 1100. You did fill out a questionnaire asking you about your attitudes on the death penalty. Do you remember that?
I do.
Okay, I want to advise you that in this case, it may be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. And remember, as you consider that, you must consider it as if it would be done in absolute and carried out in the case. Do you understand that?
I do.
All right, when you filled out your questionnaire, you were given a choice of whether you support or oppose the death penalty, and you clicked a box of support and said, as the law instructs. Is that still the way you feel today?
What page is that on?
This will be on page 12.
Yeah, I have that.
Is that still the way you feel today in terms of your attitudes on the death penalty?
It is still the case that I do support that, but again, it needs to be in the appropriate context.
Okay. If you look at page 13, you had several choices here. What most accurately represents the way you feel? And you ultimately circled C, which reads, I generally favor the death penalty, but I would base a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in the case. It looks like also you were really thinking about D because you kind of bracketed that a little bit and also underlined part of it. So is between those two, if you had to pick one, is C still your choice?
It has to be C, that's correct.
Okay. And are you willing to follow the facts, law, and instructions provided in this case if you're considering the death penalty?
I will do that.
Do you believe that you would be in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder has been committed?
No.
All right. Finally, is there anything about your personal views on the death penalty that you think would substantially impair or prevent you from serving as a juror in this case and following any instructions about the death penalty?
I don't think there is.
All right. Thank you for thinking through those questions and answering them for the court. Does the state have any follow-up or Dyer on that topic?
I don't. Thank you, Your Honor.
Any follow-up from the defense?
Ever so briefly. Sir, when we go back to page 13, you had your number that you marked as number C, or C if I remember right. Is that correct?
I had marked C, and D was just kind of wrapped into it.
Right. And what I guess I'm asking you is that there's a if there were a neutral, a box that said neutral between C and D, and that was one of the options, and the neutral said, I'm neutral on this issue, but I'm only going to base my decision on the facts and evidence, would that more likely reflect your perspective on this?
That's correct. I saw these as rated in a scale, if you will.
Right.
Descending, whatever.
Right. But again, if there was a neutral, you would say, you know, I'm more neutral on this, and I'm going to listen to the facts and evidence before I make a decision.
That's correct.
All right. Judge, I have nothing else. Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the time.
All right. Juror number 1100, then. We will pass that juror for cause on the others. And I don't know if it's more efficient to have him remain and have the others brought back or have him return and brought back with everybody. Let's have juror 1100 go back in the jury room, and then we'll have the remaining jurors brought back in once they're ready.
All right. All right, please. Counsel on here, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. Please be seated. All right. For those jurors that have returned, if you'd do us a favor one last time, and please just hold the red cards up so we can all confirm with our charts who's remaining. Okay. Thank you. Having considered now these remaining jurors and concluded individual and group voir dire, does the state pass this small group for cause?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Does the defense pass this group for cause?
Yes, Judge. Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, then you have now been passed for cause. We will continue to question additional small groups until we reach the necessary number of jurors for the attorneys to exercise their peremptory challenges. You will be leaving today and instructed to contact the jury commissioner, Randy Rutland. He will provide you further instructions on when you will return again. And you are going to be returning one more time for the peremptory challenges stage of this trial. We're not entirely sure of when that will happen, so between now and when it does, please continue to follow the court's instruction to not investigate the case, look the case up, talk to anyone about the facts of the case, or do anything else that may cause you to become impartial or exposed to facts about the case you shouldn't know before trial. Also, you can talk to people, family, friends, employers, et cetera, about the possibility of your service and when that may occur, but just please refrain from engaging in any discussion with them at all about the case. You will be asked to complete another affirmation, as you did today, when you come back, indicating that you have followed that court's instruction. So thank you again for your time. You'll receive those further instructions. And at this time, I believe we'll have you excused. Is the state okay to have this group excused for the day?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
That's all right with that as well?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks. All right, for the jury.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, we're scheduled to have another group returning at 1:30 this afternoon. Is counsel ready and prepared to do that after lunch?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks all. We'll be in recess then until 1:30 when we'll reconvene with another group of jurors.
Thank you, Your Honor. All right,
be seated. All right, good afternoon, Ward.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we're back on the record on case CR 22-211623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. We're going through small group for Dyer this afternoon. We have another group here, and we'll have the jurors brought in. We are going to speak to one juror outside of the presence of the courtroom, and then we will return back with those remaining jurors for Fort Dyer. At this time, I'll instruct the marshals to please have those jurors brought in, with the exception of the one.
All right, please. Friends, I hear you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we're going to get started here momentarily with the group voir dire. However, first the court's going to meet with counsel briefly to discuss one particular juror, so we'll do that, please, in the jury room. I'll just meet with the state and the defense. Please. Thank you. Please be seated. Okay, we are back on the record now on KCR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell, doing voir dire of a small group this afternoon. Is the state ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Is the defense ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. I'll note on the record, I just met with one juror as well as counsel for both the state and the defense in chambers, juror 1187, who upon further review of the questionnaire and motion of the state as well as the defense has been excused for bias expressed in the questionnaire. In addition, for a hardship as well. So we've allowed that juror to be excused, and we will next move on to the other jurors here. I will also indicate, last I heard, we had a juror scheduled for this group, empty seat on the back row, juror 1605, apparently has failed to appear and we haven't had word from them. Is that the latest status on this juror? All right, thank you, Mr. Bailiff. So, juror 1605 has not appeared. With that then, in order to make sure we're all lining up our seating charts with where you are and who's here, if you do me a favor, please, and just hold your red card up and leave it up here for a moment while we take our notes. Okay, thank you for doing that. Having confirmed where these jurors are seated and who's here then, let me first inquire from the state, is there any objection to the manner in which this jury panel has been recalled and seated?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Any objection from the defense?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, thank you for returning this afternoon. You've been recalled as prospective jurors in the case now before us. I'll reintroduce my court staff again and myself. I'm Stephen W. Boyce. I'm the district judge for Fremont County, Idaho, and I'm in charge of this trial and this courtroom. Our court clerk assisting today is Shannon Holstein, who's seated to my right. She takes minutes of these proceedings and also administers oaths to you as jurors. The court I have assisting me in maintaining courtroom order and working with the jury are marshals here today, and they will help the jurors know where they're supposed to be as they move about for these proceedings. Also, our court reporter, Mary Fox, takes a stenographic record of everything said during the trial, including today. And Courtney Stallings is my staff attorney who assists me with legal and administrative issues that come out throughout the day. Each one of you is qualified to serve as a juror of this court, and each one of you filled out a questionnaire that's now been reviewed by the attorneys and the court. And the first thing we do in a trial is to select 18 jurors in this case, which would include 12 jurors for trial and 6 alternates from among you. At this time, then, I am going to have clerk please take a roll call of the jurors that are here present. So when your name's mentioned, please hold up your red card and state either present or here so we get a record of who is attending. Madam Clerk, if you'd please take the roll call at this time.
Juror 977. Here. Juror 1185.
Here.
Juror 1219.
Here.
Juror 1248.
Here.
Juror 1271.
Here.
Juror 1288.
Here.
Juror 1330.
Here.
Juror 1353.
Here.
Juror 1366.
Here.
Juror 1382.
Here.
Juror 1436.
Here.
Juror 1503.
Here.
Juror 1537.
Here.
Juror 1557.
Here.
And juror 1632.
All right, thank you, Madam Clerk. At this time, as I mentioned, we do have one juror who failed to appear, and for that juror, the court will require they report either by 5 p.m. or provide some explanation for the failure to appear. If there is no good explanation or further appearance, they may be subject to a fine up to $500 or imprisonment up to 5 days in county jail. That's pursuant to Idaho Code 7610 and Idaho Code 2208. Next, I am going to introduce you and to assist in participating in the jury selection process to the parties and their lawyers, and I'll briefly summarize what this case is about. When I introduce an individual, please stand and briefly face the jury panel, then retake your seat. This case has been brought by the state of Idaho. I will sometimes refer to the state as the prosecution. States represented in this trial by Lindsay Blake, Fremont County Prosecutor, Rob Wood, Madison County Prosecutor, Ingrid Beatty is a specially appointed prosecutor in the case, and Rocky Wixom, a deputy Fremont County Prosecutor. The defendant in this case, Chad Guy Daybell, is represented by his lawyer, John Pryor.
Good afternoon.
This case is a criminal matter, meaning the defendant is charged by the state of Idaho with a violation of the law. I previously read to you a summary of the charges in the amended indictment, and you were here last week to complete your questionnaires. With regard to the defendant, the state of Idaho alleges that Chad Guy Daybell committed the following crimes. Count one, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count two, first-degree murder. Count three, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count four, first-degree murder. Count five, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Count six, first-degree murder. Count seven, insurance fraud. Count nine, insurance fraud. Mr. Daybell has pled not guilty to the charges. Please remember that is simply a description of the charges. It is not evidence. Under our law and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove his innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from lack of evidence. If after considering all the evidence, you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. The duty of the jury is to determine the facts and then apply the law set forth in the instructions I will later give you to those facts. In this way, you will decide the case. In applying the court's instruction as to the controlling law, you must follow those instructions regardless of your opinion of what the law is or what the law should be or what any lawyer may state the law to be. During the course of this trial, including this jury selection process, you are instructed that you are not to discuss the case among yourselves or with anyone else, including any use of email, text messaging, social media, or any other form of communication, electronic or otherwise. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source, including the internet. Do not form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your determination. At this time, I'm going to request that the clerk administer an oath to the entire jury panel for voir dire examination. If each of you would please stand and raise your right hand, I'll have that oath administered now.
You solemnly swear or affirm that you will truthfully answer such questions as may be asked of you by court or counsel, touching upon your qualifications to sit as a trial juror in the cause now on trial, so help you God.
All right, thank you. Please be seated. Clerk is now impaneled this group of prospective jurors for questioning. Will the attorneys stipulate that the jurors have been properly called and impaneled, beginning with the state?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. The attorney's been so stipulated. In this part of the jury selection, you're going to be asked questions touching on your qualifications to serve as jurors in this particular case. This part of the case is known as the voir dire examination. Voir dire is an ancient Anglo-Norman term dating back hundreds of years to the origins of common law. And in Old French, it simply means to speak the truth. Voir dire examination is for the purpose of determining if your decision in this case would in any way be influenced by opinions which you now hold or by some personal experience or special knowledge which you may have concerning the subject matter to be tried. The object is to obtain 12 persons who will impartially try the issues of this case upon the evidence presented in this courtroom without being influenced by any other factors. Please understand this questioning is not for the purpose of prying into your personal affairs. It's only for the purpose of obtaining an impartial jury. Whenever you need to answer a question, please raise your hand or your red card. And when called upon to speak, please identify yourself by your card number. And also, these proceedings are being stenographically recorded. So give a verbal response such as yes or no, shaking your head or nodding, doesn't pick up and make a record. And also on that point, please try to avoid speaking at the same time as anyone questioning you. When only one person's talking at a time, our court reporter is able to make a clear record. I'll also note that the proceedings here are not only open to the public, but being broadcast on a court's channel on YouTube for public access. You are not being videoed or filmed. However, your audible responses are being broadcast. Keep that in mind when answering these questions. And if any question you believe would be embarrassing or something uncomfortable for you to talk about publicly, we will arrange to let you discuss that in a more private setting. Also, if you have an answer to some question that you think may prejudice the other jurors or some information they may not know about the case, for example, please don't discuss that in front of the other jurors, and we'll talk to you individually about that. This case has had a lot of pretrial media coverage, and so any facts you may know, we'll talk to you one by one, and please don't discuss those in front of the rest of the jury panel. At this time, I am going to read you a special instruction being provided in this case, and this is as follows. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, has been charged in the amended indictment with certain counts of entering into a conspiracy with Lori Bella Daybell and or Alex Cox. The crime of conspiracy involves an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. You must only consider the evidence against the defendant in this case and should not speculate as to any other case or legal proceedings involving the alleged co-conspirators. You must remember that the defendant has the presumption of innocence, and you must consider his guilt or innocence based solely on the evidence provided in this case. That concludes the special instruction. At this time, I would also instruct attorneys for both parties to avoid repeating questions the court's already asked. You do have the right, however, to direct follow-up questions to a juror regarding that juror's response to a previous question. The jury should be aware that during and following the voir dire examination, one or more of you may be challenged. Each side has challenges called for cause, which means that they can ask a juror to be excused for a specific reason. In addition, each side has a certain number of peremptory challenges, which means each side can ask that a juror be excused without giving any reason. If you are excused by either side, please do not feel offended or feel that your honesty or integrity has been questioned. It has not. In addition, you may be questioned about your jury service once you're excused. If you are questioned by anyone, including members of the media, you are permitted to talk to them, but I would encourage you to respect the feelings of your fellow jurors, to not discuss anything that you think may impede the court in selecting an impartial jury while we're in this process. And if you don't want to talk to them and they persist, you could report that to the court. At this time, the court is going to begin its portion of the voir dire process, after which the attorneys for both parties will be given an opportunity to make their own inquiries. When I'm asking questions to certain jurors, please pay attention to those as you may be called upon later to answer the same questions. First question I'll ask relates not the 22-page questionnaire you filled, but a juror information form, which contains information such as your residency in Ada County, for example. Is there anyone here that thinks the information in your juror information form is inaccurate and would need to be corrected? Okay, no one answered to that. I'll next ask, on the questionnaire then, and without necessarily getting into the details, because those will be discussed, but is there anything you think within your questionnaire that at this stage you just need to change or correct? All right, no one responded to that. The next matter I want to bring up relates to the time commitment for this trial. This is scheduled to be a long trial, and parties have estimated it will take approximately 8 to 10 weeks. Given that time frame, would such service create a hardship upon you or your family or your business or profession or occupation so as to prevent you from rendering service as a fair and impartial juror in this case? If you believe you do have a hardship given the length of the trial, please raise your red card. All right, we've got two jurors that have responded to that. On the front row, could you raise yours again, please? Thank you. All right, at this point then, I am going to address those hardship requests individually. So we'll start with the first juror on the front row, number 1248.
Sure, yeah.
I was just reviewing your questionnaire real quick to see what you indicated. You did check the yes box for whether you thought there was a hardship. You said working full-time and losing that much income would be a financial burden. Have you been able to discuss your possible service with your employer in this case?
I discussed that with HR yesterday. They would only be able to cover 2 weeks.
And that is what they just confirmed yesterday?
Yes.
All right. Is that your sole source of income?
It is.
And if you were to be out 8 weeks of pay, would that financially strain you?
It would.
All right. Any follow-up questions from the state on a board dire for hardship for this juror?
No, Your Honor. We actually had a note to follow up with juror 1248. I think given that additional information today, the state would make a motion to move for cause for the hardship, and that's exactly what we were going to follow up with today.
All right. Any board dire from the defense?
Judge, we would also move to excuse.
Very well. Juror 1248, we appreciate you coming in and taking the time to fill out the questionnaire and returning. I understand with that being your sole source of income and the length of this trial, that would constitute a hardship for you, so you can be excused from service. The bailiff will take your questionnaire, and thanks again for coming in. Juror number 1632 has indicated they would have a hardship also. You did mention in your questionnaire a concern about a trip planned, I think early June. Could you give some more explanation about what the trip is, when it is, and if it could be changed?
Trip is planned for June 4th through June 12th. It's a vacation, family reunion. Canceled. I also do, as far as family, take my kid to school. My wife is a teacher who is starting her work day before our kids' school day.
Follow-up board dire, please, from the state.
Your Honor, the state does not have any additional questions. We would simply submit to the court on this one.
I'll have a bit of a follow-up on the plans you have on that trip. Have you pre-purchased or already paid for anything, such as flights?
They have not been purchased by me. They are being purchased by a family member. Potentially, it could be put off.
Okay. Mr. Pryor.
Tell me a little bit more about this large extended family. Or?
I don't have a large family. I do have family in Alabama. That's
where the family reunion, that's where it's going.
Yeah, my dad's side of the family.
So how many people are we talking about?
It's my family, my parents, my brother and his wife, and then the people that live down there. Half dozen to a dozen.
Okay, and this was what I recall is that this was reset as a result of COVID for some reason, right?
Correct. Yeah, back in, I don't remember the specific date, but back in 2020 or 2021, it was canceled because of COVID, yes.
And are other relatives flying in from other parts of the country as well?
Just my brother and his wife are flying in from Maine.
Judge, I'm going to submit to the court.
Juror 1632, if you remained in and missed the trip, do you think that would become a distraction for you, knowing that you missed out on a trip that's been planned for several years here?
Possibly.
I understand. Given that it was already rescheduled and canceled once, it is a long trial. There's a likelihood we may well be in the trial on those dates. I am going to permit, per your request, the excusal for hardship. In addition, with your child care obligations as well, court will find you can be excused. So, juror number 1632, thank you for coming in and completing your questionnaire.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Did anyone else have a concern on that issue they wanted to raise with the court? All right. Well, thanks everyone for your commitment to being available for that time frame. The next issue we'll bring up then relates to whether or not you have any previous knowledge of this case. This case has had significant exposure and reporting in the media. If you have had any knowledge of that case, we'll discuss that with you individually. So all I'll ask at this time is if you do have some knowledge of this case, the facts of this case, or the issues involved with in this case, would you please raise your red card or your hand? Okay. If you'll give us a moment, we'll note these down. All right, thank you. We'll come back and question you individually about those matters. Next topic I'll raise is the subject matter of the case. I've read to you the charges. Would the subject matter of this case, including charges involving murder, conspiracy, and insurance fraud, make it impossible or difficult for you to fairly and objectively evaluate the evidence in this case and render a fair and impartial verdict? No one answered yes to that. I'll next ask a series of questions that will seem very obvious perhaps to you, but I'm required to ask them under Idaho law to ensure that you don't have any kind of improper connection to this case or any of the people involved in the case. So the first question along those lines is, are you related by blood or marriage to the defendant, Mr. Daybell, or do you know him from any kind of business or social relationship? No one said yes. Do any of you have a legal relationship such as guardian and ward, master and servant, employer and employee, creditor and debtor, landlord and tenant, boarder or lodger, any of those kinds of relationships between any of you and any of the attorneys in the case? No one said yes to that. Are any of you a party in any civil action lawsuit against Mr. Daybell? No answer to that. Have any of you ever brought a criminal complaint against Mr. Daybell or been accused of a crime by any of the prosecutors that are here present today? No one responded to that. Do any of you have any kind of an attorney-client relationship with Mr. Pryor, either now or in the past, or his law firm? No one responded to that. Are any of you related by blood or marriage to any of the lawyers here, or do any of you know any of the lawyers from a professional, business, or social relationship? No response. Have any of you ever formed or expressed an unqualified opinion that the defendant is guilty or not guilty of the offense charged? There's no response there. Do any of you have any bias or prejudice either for or against the defendant, Mr. Daybell? There's no response there. Are any of you unwilling to follow the court's instructions as to the law you must apply in determining this case? No response. Do any of you have a religious or moral position that would make it impossible to sit in judgment of another or to render a fair and impartial verdict? No response to that. Are there any of you that if you are selected as a juror in this case, would you be unwilling or unable to render a fair and impartial verdict based upon the evidence presented in this courtroom and the law as instructed by the court? There's no response to that. I have one final question then. Do any of you have any other reason why you cannot give this case your undivided attention and render a fair and impartial verdict? All right, no one responded to that. That will conclude the report section of board hire examination. I'll next allow the state to proceed with this board hire group. Is that going to be Ms. Blake?
It is, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Blake, you can proceed.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being back this afternoon. I know this has already been quite a process. You were all here last week to fill out a questionnaire. Now we have you back here today. We are going to go over questions with you today, just to get some information. I want to go over a little bit why we're doing that. As you sit here today as potential jurors, what we're trying to do is make sure we select a jury that feels that they can be fair and impartial and that they can hear all the evidence in this case, give it the weight they think it's due, and ultimately render a decision and a verdict in this matter. So we go through this, the defendant Chad Daybell is entitled to a fair trial, and the state of Idaho is also entitled to a fair trial. So that's why we go through these questions. We just want to ensure that that's what both parties receive. So as I ask you questions, I don't want anyone to feel like I'm picking on you, but I will call on some people, get some responses, and just kind of go from there. Also, as we do this, the judge has already told you, but if at any time I ask you something that you're not comfortable talking about in a group setting, that is totally fine. I may ask something that I have no idea, maybe something personal, something that you'd rather talk about not in front of everyone. Just let us know, and we'll do our best to make those accommodations. This is not meant to make anyone feel uncomfortable. That being said, I want to start with throwing out the term brutal honesty. I want you to think about that for a minute. And juror 1219, if you hear the term brutal honesty, what does that mean to you?
Seeing the facts for what they are and speaking your mind.
Thank you for that. And juror 1537, how about for you?
Just telling the truth, I guess.
Thank you. I appreciate both those responses. And would everyone agree that it may also mean you don't hold back, even if it might hurt someone's feelings? You're not going to do a white lie. You're not going to spare feelings. It's just going to be telling it how it is. Would everyone agree that that would be being truly honest or brutally honest with someone?
Yes.
Thank you. And the reason I go over that with all of you is as you sit here today, there's two reasons for this. One is today, as we're going through this process, I'm going to ask you all to be brutally honest. Don't hold back. If there's something you think we need to know, either party, tell us. That's what we're here for today. And the second part of it is, as we go through everything, if you're selected to be a juror, at some point, the judge will give you jury instructions. And he'll tell you at what point you can start deliberating with each other. And we need to make sure that when you're back deliberating, you can also be brutally honest or honest with each other as you go through that process. Hearing that today, does that cause any concerns for anyone?
No.
No.
Thank you. And we only have someone that we know is kind of our go-to. So for me, my oldest niece, I learned pretty quick when she was little. She hadn't learned any filter. She hadn't learned kind of the little white lies or to spare feelings. So if I truly wanted to know something, I could go to her. If I wanted to know how my hair looked or how an outfit looked, she just gave it to me straight. And do most of you have someone like that in your life, whether a kid or a trusted adult that you know you can go to for just the straight answer?
Yeah.
That's what we're asking you to do today. Just be that person for all of us here. Have all of you flown on a plane before?
Yes.
Like everyone has. So normally you get on the plane and at some point they tell you, hey, sit back, enjoy your flight. We're going to get to the destination at approximately such and such time. And they take off. If instead of hearing that announcement, you got on the plane and the pilot came over the PA and said, so I'm going to try to land the plane and I think we're going to get to the destination at this time and I'll do my best. Would any of you feel comfortable staying on that plane?
No.
And juror 1577, I think I saw a pretty emphatic shake of your head. Why wouldn't you feel comfortable staying on that plane?
Because there's too much doubt. There's doubt that I would make it.
You want that assurance.
Yes.
That's fair. And juror 1353, how about you?
I would hope he was joking.
And I think that's a fair answer as well. And the reason I bring that up is you're all going to be the pilot in this case, essentially. And we want to make sure that everyone can give us the assurance that, again, we've kind of talked about it, but that you'll be able to sit on the jury, hear the evidence, give it the weight you think it's due, and land the plane. Be able to give us that verdict after listening to everything, and to be fair and impartial in doing it. Does anyone sitting here today have any concerns about your ability to do that? Thank you. The judge already talked to you a little bit about the charges in this case. And so as you all know, there are several counts of conspiracy to commit first degree murder. And there are also several counts of first degree murder. The victims in this case involve two children and a mother of five. Because of the nature of the case, you will see some images that may be graphic. They may be disturbing to some people. It's the evidence in the case that you'll be presented with. Knowing that, does that cause anyone concerns about your ability to sit on this jury and weigh that evidence with all the other evidence and just give it the weight you think it's due? And juror 1330, I think that maybe was from you. Talk to me a little bit about that, if you're willing.
I feel like I can say that I would be fine. I think I could tell myself that I'd be fine until I saw it. And as a mother, I might not be.
So I don't want to put you too much on the spot, but I just want to talk to you a little bit more about that. So if you're given an instruction by the judge that you're to view all the evidence, give it the weight you think it's due, do you think viewing those type of images would have such an effect on you that you couldn't be fair and impartial and weigh the evidence, the other evidence?
No.
You think you would be able to view it, even though it might be upsetting?
Be impartial. Absolutely. But could I look at it? Difficult.
And when you say difficult to look at it, if you knew you had to view all the evidence, do you think, even though it might be disturbing, which is normal, do you think you would be able to view it and then just give it the weight you think it's due in relation to all the other evidence you may see or hear?
Yes.
Thank you for that. And juror 977, I think you also are a mother. Does that cause you any concern about your ability to be able to view those images? Do you think that if shown them, even if they were upsetting to you, do you think you would be able to just weigh them and give them the evidence you, or the weight you think they're due in relation to all the other evidence that you may see or hear? Nothing about them would automatically make you form an opinion just based on those alone. Thank you for that. And juror 1288, I apologize, I think I missed a hand from you, so I'm sorry about that. Can you talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have two very young children. It would be very difficult for me to see that.
And kind of same line of questioning, while it might be difficult and it might be upsetting, do you think you would be able to view those images and give them the weight you think they're due in relation to any other and all other evidence presented in the case?
I think I would be able to, yes.
And I know there was a little bit of hesitation there, so I'm just going to follow up a little bit. If you looked at those images, do you think it would automatically cause you to form an opinion of guilt or innocence, or do you think you'd be able to just view it and wait until it's time to deliberate and form that opinion?
I think I would struggle to not make an immediate opinion.
And when we talk about an immediate opinion, do you think you would automatically attribute the images to the defendant and hold them against him? Or would you be willing to listen to all the evidence and make that determination?
I would be willing to listen, but I worry truthfully that I could be partial at proceeding.
I may have just a moment, Your Honor.
Yes.
And juror 1288, we may follow up with you a little bit more on the individual, if you'll still bear with us and hang in there for this process. Thank you. So I also have a little kid, and in the mornings when he gets up, if I ask him, what do you want for breakfast? Nine times out of 10, it's cheesy eggs. And there is a very specific recipe that he likes me to follow. So it's the eggs and the milk and the cheese and salt and pepper. And if I modify it, he might get upset with me. He might refuse to eat it. Sometimes he might want some extra cheese and I'll do that for him. Do any of you have someone in your life like that, whether a kid or an adult, you know, that maybe has a specific recipe they like done just a certain way? And you're 1, 4, 3, 6, I think you had said yes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I have two kids. I'm pretty picky. And they want things a certain way. If it's not made that way, then they don't want to eat it. So.
And oftentimes, are you willing to do it the way they want?
Majority, yeah.
Do you sometimes modify it?
Yes.
Fair enough. And juror 1185, how about you?
He's a pretty picky guy. Doesn't really like any seasoning or anything, so if I try and do anything too special.
I'm having a little trouble hearing.
My son. So my son's pretty picky. If I try and add any like spices or anything to his food, which I'm always trying to do because I'm a chef, but he won't eat it.
And I noticed you were a chef, so I kind of wondered about that. So you deal with recipes a lot.
Yes.
And in your line of work, do you sometimes modify them?
Only if you have to.
So at times, do you just follow the recipe as is?
Yes.
And why do you do that?
Because it's what works.
And someone else has either determined that or you've maybe created the recipe yourself?
Yes.
And you know that's what works. So in this case, because in our everyday lives, sometimes we might modify things a little bit. We may look at a recipe and say, I'm going to add or subtract this. I'm going to do it a little bit different. But again, we've talked about the jury instructions. The judge is going to give you very specific jury instructions. And in this situation, you won't be able to modify those. So it'll be whatever the judge instructs. That's it. That's the law. That's what you follow. And that will include some instructions regarding these particular crimes and what elements are required to be proven. So in that, kind of like ingredients in a recipe, the judge will outline what is necessary. Sometimes you might look at that and think, man, I really wish this element makes no sense to me. Why do they have to prove this? Or you may think, well, they should also have to prove this. This doesn't make any sense. But you don't get to modify it here. Does anyone have concerns about their ability to follow the instructions as given by the court?
No.
And some of the charges here deal with the crime of homicide. And you'll be given an instruction. And again, it's what's given by the judge that'll be what matters. But it will include something along the lines of that the individual was involved, that the defendant engaged in conduct which caused the death of a person. So that'll be one of the elements. What you won't see is there will not be an element that says the state has to prove what the cause was. So it'll say we have to prove someone did it, but we don't have to prove how they did it necessarily. Or we don't have to prove why the person actually died and what was the cause. Does anyone have concerns that if the state is able to prove that a murder happened, will anyone be thinking that the court should have added that element? Or will everyone be able to follow the court's instruction as given?
Yes.
Follow the instruction as given. Does that cause anyone concerned sitting here today? Thank you. Anyone here an NFL fan? I see some nods. So we got quite a few. Juror 1271, you nodded your head.
Yeah.
So Kansas City Chiefs won this year. You don't have to tell me how you feel about it. You can if you want.
It's not a shower,
so. Okay. So knowing that, and even with that, would you agree that every person on the Kansas City Chiefs team should get a Super Bowl ring?
Yes.
And that could include, and so even if the quarterback played a bigger role, do you think the punter should still get a ring?
Sure.
And the second string?
Yes.
Even if they didn't play on the field? And why do you think that?
In my experience from growing up playing sports to my career now is that sometimes the most underrepresented individual within that group actually is overwhelmingly a reason why there's a success to a plan being whatever that is. And it's not the one that's always sitting behind the camera. So it's very obvious to me that everyone should, right, for that reason. So you don't understand what really happens behind the scenes.
Right. Thank you for that. And you're 1503. How about you? What do you think? Should everyone get the ring? And why do you think?
Well, I play soccer. I play team sports. So
think it's a collective effort to win and lose. So, yeah. So, yeah, that everyone equally participates in
that. I appreciate those answers, and thanks for the involvement. You heard the judge start to give an instruction regarding conspiracy, or he did give you an instruction regarding conspiracy. And he talked about it being an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. And the actual instruction he gave talked about that you're not to consider Lori Vallow-Daybell or Alex Cox's guilt or anything that may be going on with their cases. And we all understand that. Everyone's in agreement that they'll follow that instruction.
Yes.
What you will hear about in this trial, though, are some actions that are alleged to have been taken by Lori Vallow-Daybell and actions that have been taken by Alex Cox. And remember, a conspiracy is an agreement between two or more persons to commit a crime. An additional element is that then just one of those persons has to do an act in furtherance of the conspiracy. So just one person has to take an action that gets them closer to committing that crime. So if you were to hear evidence that there's, you know, A, B, and C involved in the conspiracy, A, B, and C reach an agreement, and you think the state has proven that there's an agreement to meet a crime, and you think the state proves that all the individuals or the particular individuals involved wanted to commit that crime, wanted that crime to happen, and the state only shows that, say, person C did an act in furtherance. If given jury instructions describing conspiracy that way, would you be able to still hold person A or B accountable for the actions of person C, given that there had to be the agreement and just one person had to do something in furtherance?
No.
You wouldn't be able to? And that's juror 1353? So let's talk a little bit about that. What's your concern with that?
I think everybody should be responsible for their actions. You can talk about doing something, but doing it is completely different. So you're responsible for what you do, not for what you talk about.
And if you're told that conspiracy involves reaching an agreement, so we're talking about people meeting and agreeing to commit a crime, does that change anything for you that there's that agreement, that they were required to prove there's an agreement?
No, they have to do it. They have to commit the crime.
And if you were given a jury instruction that said this is what conspiracy is and you just have to find one person did an act in furtherance, would you find that hard or impossible to follow that jury instruction?
It would be impossible.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.